It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
On Farm to Table Talk, we talk about our food and how it's grown. And I've noticed that some of the people that listen to Farm to Table Talk are worried about how their food is grown. And that's part of the reason that they're paying attention. And in fact, maybe we can go even further and say some of them are scared to death about how food is produced today. So I couldn't be happier to have as my guest today, the author of a book called Scared to Death, and also a book called Chemophobia, John Entine. And John is also the founder and executive director of the Genetic Literacy Project. John, welcome to Farm Table Talk.
Thank you. Super glad to be here.
John, what caused you to write a book called Scared to Death?
Well, we are all concerned about the food we eat. There's an obesity epidemic in the United States. I think we have a history of seeing the misuse of chemicals dating back to the 1990s. And I think it's natural for a mom, a dad, to think hard about what's in our food and perhaps be concerned about whether we have too many chemicals in our food. You hear all the time organizations like the Environmental Working Group putting out their 10 most dangerous foods because of chemical residues. So these issues are a hot topic, I think, among parents. So I thought it's important to address the myths and the truths about chemicals in our food and chemicals in society in general, besides in our food.
You know, I'm curious, if when you wrote this book and you started getting feedback from the book, what were some of the things that people were most surprised that they said, I never really thought about it that way? I mean, when you got any feedback about what you were putting in the book of Scared to Death, what were the comments?
Well, Scared to Death, as you said, is one of two books that I've written on this subject of chemicals. The other is Crop Chemophobia, which really focuses on pesticides in our food supply and the agricultural industry. My main premise is that although there are some chemicals that we should be aware of, more than by and large, overwhelmingly, our food supply is incredibly safe, that the residues that can show up on biomonitoring tests, and we are now at the point that we can almost find parts per trillion. And anything more than parts per million is not going to harm us. But people, just because it's something can be identified in a test or in urine, immediately have a phobia about it, a fear about it. And I think there's a lot of overreaction. So I wanted to provide a guide. And I think it surprised people that many of their fears are unfounded. I don't want to disabuse them of monitoring and being careful. But that said, we have a phobia, and I think it's perpetuated by a lot of special interest groups that recognize that this is a great money raiser for some of their activities.
Yeah, for example, it seems like fairly regularly we're hearing about, we can see that we've got Roundup in everything, or glyphosate, which is in Roundup, and that's been the one that seems to have the most publicity. And so who's doing all of this? I mean, when people are, looking to find traces of, these pesticides, is it the government that is that's funding these programs, or are there other interests?
Yeah, glyphosate is a good example because it's one of the most studied herbicides in the world today. There's been literally over 400 studies on glyphosate, and every major science organization in the world that looks at risk. When I say risk, I mean, can it really harm you? We're talking about the EPA, studies that they've done and reviewed, the European Food Safety Authority, the Royal Academy, Health Canada, New Zealand. Every one of those has said that the level of glyphosate consumed in food The pesticide residues are so small, so trace, that they have absolutely no effect. It's also biodegradable in the soil. There's one agency called the International Association for Research on Cancer, which also concluded that pesticide residues in food have no impact on you. They are an agency that doesn't look at so-called exposure or dose. So they put out a report that said, well, it may cause cancer in workers who spray it. But no other agency has found that. They didn't look at exposure. And when you look at the data for exposure, you'd have to literally take showers of glyphosate for a worker to be harmed by it. So frankly, what you have is groups who are opposed to certain aspects of modern agriculture. Glyphosate is originally a Monsanto product. And they see it as a target for going after what they see as the excesses of intensive agriculture or large agribusinesses. And glyphosate is an easy target because of that one study, which interestingly said it does not pose any harm in traces in our food. But that's not what you read when you see these glaring headlines around the world.
Does the average family have ways that they wanted to, that they're able to check, that they're able to say, gee, I'm worried whether or not my kids have, you know, pesticides in their system or something? Do people go to the doctor or somewhere and say, could you have an analysis done that we know whether or not we've got residues in us?
Well, our body has residues of almost everything around us. This is a world filled with chemicals. Humans are made of chemicals. So let's not demonize the word chemicals, sure. First of all. There really aren't any studies that can do that other than a urine analysis, but a urine analysis basically shows you nothing because the whole idea of the kidney is to get rid of harmful toxins, and they can be natural toxins. People don't know this, but really 99% of the pesticides in the environment are natural pesticides. They're created by in the natural world, everything from Listeria to E. coli to the natural pesticides that a lot of plants have to prevent certain insects from going after them. So again, we have to judiciously distinguish between what might be harmful and what's pure hysteria. There are some groups recently that have done their kind of, I would call it homebrew type tests of things like glyphosate, including work groups like the Environmental Working Group, NRDC, and others. And wow, they did find traces of glyphosate in the parts per billion, which is about 1,000 times lower. A thousand times lower than would cause any harm to humans at all. So at some point, just the fact that we can find something, the fact that we can find literally a micro drop in a swimming pool of a chemical is not a cause for harm. And the problem about this is that this creates an hysteria about food in general, about the environment in general. And when we end up banning or restricting something that we know is pretty safe, lots of times what gets substituted is something that we know is pretty harmful, but because it doesn't have the name that has been come under attack, no one says boo about it.
Well, again, it's really interesting because there are people that get very, very worried about it. And if they, and again, they can go check if they wanted to. And if they did, what you're saying is don't be surprised. You're going to find you got a lot in you. There are just a lot of chemicals that are going to show up that are in our body
in urine that's excreted, but that doesn't indicate any potential problems. Again, the whole reason we have liver and kidney is to purify things and protect us against against chemicals. And you literally can find almost any chemical that's in the environment in urine if you have a sophisticated enough analytical system.
There are rules, though. There's in applying chemicals, so there are some products where they say that they're not to be applying it to the trees or to the vegetables, you know, a certain time before they're harvested, and then often they have instructions too and say, you know, wash off your food before you consume it because if there's excess anything on there, you'll get.
It's
most
just
of
a
it
natural
off.
Caution. I don't think there's been studies done of conventional food. And the residue of chemicals and pesticides, despite what I think hysteria-generating groups like the Environmental Working Group say, don't pose any dangers. As I mentioned, the EWG puts out a Dirty Dozen list every year of the top 10 chemicals they feel are potentially dangerous. I mean, apples was on the top of the list one year, and there were plenty of articles in science publications saying you literally have to eat 180 unwashed apples a day over the course of a year for you to even approach the level that the government scientists and world scientists believe pose any harm. But that's not what EWG is about. They're about scaring people and raising money on issues involving what I would call chemophobia.
I've talked to them before, and they had something called the Clean 15, I think.
Yeah.
And so they were promoting the other end, but they said the people wanted to see the Dirty Dozen more than hear about Clean 15.
But the Clean 15 is just as silly as the Dirty Dozen. And frankly, a lot of that is based on claiming that organic food does not have chemical residues on that. And we know that that's not true now. The government doesn't require testing of chemical uses. But I'll just give you one interesting example. There was a California county last year that became concerned because of propaganda from the EWG and other groups that glyphosate might pose a harm. So they decided to substitute an organic chemical instead, but the organic chemical was so toxic that they had to wear hazmat suits, and I have pictures of them wearing hazmat suits applying the organic chemical on their plants. Glyphosate doesn't require any protection at all at the levels that it's used, and the cost was literally 11 times what glyphosate costs. So that's the kind of bizarre reaction that we have when we have a chemophobic patina looking at food and chemicals.
Some people are slapping their head right now because they just assumed that organic didn't use chemicals at all. But there are chemicals, right?
Oh, there's you just have to go to the USDA website on organic farming, and there's a list of a few hundred approved chemicals, including, let's give you an example, the leading fungicide, in other words, to control fungus in the organic farming community is something called copper sulfate. It is literally copper sulfate. Look up copper sulfate on Wikipedia or in any chemical dictionary. Copper sulfate is one of the most carcinogenic compounds you could possibly use. Europe has recommended banning copper sulfate, but they don't want to ban it because it is the single most used chemical by the organic industry, but in a magnitude of times, it's probably 1,000 times more harmful than glyphosate, yet it's used by organic farmers, will show up in your bloodstream, will show up in your urine, and yet it gets a free pass because it's an organic, a natural chemical. Natural doesn't mean safer. In fact, most synthetic chemicals have been designed to be targeted, and in some cases, much more streamlined and safer than many natural counterparts.
Well, this brings me around to something else that's been in the news not too long ago, and that was a report out of Europe that that there was less incidence of cancer from people that consumed organic food. I'm sure you're familiar with that.
Yeah, it just came out about 2 weeks ago. It was a very highly publicized study. If anybody's interested, they can Google it and find articles in mainstream publications representing the study. What you don't find, except in some science publications, including my website, Scientific American, and a lot of other high-profile science sites, is an analysis of that study, and it's literally a disaster of a study. For instance, what it showed is that if you're a female and you eat organic foods, you are less likely to have cancer. But if you're a male and eat organic foods and a high number of conventional foods, it doesn't affect you at all. In other words, there's a big distinction. Why would it affect females in one way and males in a different way? It also, the study didn't look at what we call confounding factors, which you need to look at in a study. And that is things like how poor are the people? Wealthier people tend to buy fresher foods, and that really affects how they, what kind of foods they consume. Also, it was done only of French citizens. France is very highly antagonistic to conventional agriculture to a large degree. There's no GMOs there, of course. They're banned. And yet, there's almost a self-selection process. It's all based on reporting. All I can tell you, your audience, is go to the Genetic Literacy Project. We have at least three or four articles reporting on that study, and it was eviscerated by the mainstream science community. And there is no other study that that has come out that suggests the same kind of findings.
You know, it just is everywhere. The other book you've written was chemophobia.
Crop chemophobia.
Again, there's so many different examples of where people are worried. One example is BPA.
Yes.
And BPA is a can liner. And I think you've studied that extensively as well.
Yeah, it's called bisphenol A. It's called a plasticizer, and to the extent it's a can liner, it's really lining the can with a very thin level of plastic. It's been used in teeth, re-enameling or repairing teeth. It's widely been used in bottles, including baby bottles, and it's been used in even medical equipment because it allows plastic to retain a kind of flexibility, but also keep its clarity. It's been around for a long time. It's now the most heavily tested chemical over the past 15 years. You go on certain advocacy groups, activist groups like EWG, NRDC, and a few others, and they have these diatribes against BPA, and they were very, very omnipresent. Maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, and the Obama administration, as it should have, decided to take this very seriously, and they spent over $30 million supporting research to basically saying, does BPA cause problems, like a small group of endocrinologists, but very loudly represented in the media, claim. And they've recently came back with the results of that. There were more than 140 studies. Not one showed that BPA caused any problems in humans at the levels that it's used. There was a recent study that just came out in the past 2 weeks that reconfirmed that, a government study, also started during the Obama administration. So now we have a dilemma. We have a small group of endocrinologists who claim that BPA causes potential disruption of the endocrine system. And it does it at micro levels. It doesn't matter. We tend to have always believed that the dose causes the dose makes the poison. The higher the dose of a chemical, the more likely it is to be harmful. Caffeine at a high level is a carcinogen. Alcohol at a high level is a carcinogen. And BPA at a high level could cause that problem as well. But they were claiming just the opposite. The very, very low levels of it are what was causing these problems. That's exactly what these studies were designed to address. Now, what's our situation that we have today? Well, the drumbeat by these activist groups 3 and 4 years ago caused such a public outcry, and media reports scared so many people. They were scared to death that companies that were making products that had BPA decided, they threw up their arms and said, hey, we'll just try to find another plasticizer that does the similar kinds of work. It may be more expensive, but hey, we'll take that change. We'll make that change to placate our consumers, because we can't get into the business of deciding what's right and what's wrong necessarily on science issues. So what did they replace it with? All those BPA-free baby bottles that parents eagerly are snapping up, they've replaced it with BPS. BPS is a sister chemical of BPA. Unfortunately, it's carcinogenic and far more toxic than BPA ever was. It's a demonstrated human carcinogen. And do I think BPS is necessarily dangerous at the minute levels that it's in these products? No, but it's far, far more dangerous than BPA is, if you believe the trace chemicals at the level that BPA is in our products causes harm. So we replaced a perfectly safe product with something that's a known harmful product, and people who buy BPA-free products are being scammed, and they're potentially harming their children.
You know, I know people listening to this right now are ready to throw their hands up in the air and say, oh my God, you know, what do I do? You know, how do we deal with this? I mean, they have had legitimate worries that they want to check into this and that. I mean, what creates this situation that we have right now? Is it lack of trust in the government agencies, or lack of trust in big corporations, or maybe even these other organizations that are fanning the fires? What do you think is causing this high level of concern and getting extreme reactions?
I think you've touched on a few of them. I think we're in a period of huge skepticism about any authority. A government is not believed to on a large degree. I think this is maybe exacerbated to some degree, even under the Trump administration, with the controversy of gutting a lot of EPA rules. But that said, liberals as well are suspicious when the government comes out with a report that says this chemical is not harmful. They assume that industry had some way to influence the decision. You mentioned as well, I think that we are in an era that is greatly skeptical of industry as a whole. Ranking way down on the list of trust, probably at the level of Congress, which is pretty low. People believe that industry will do things for their own bottom line and put the public interest behind them. So if a company comes out with a product, a chemical, there's immediate suspicion that they're trying to pull the wool over their eyes. And then we have special interest groups. I would call them old line environmentalists. There's a real split. A growing split in the environmental movement between old-line environmentalists who emerged out of the 60s and 70s, and I'm of that era, with a great suspicion of the misuse of chemicals. That was omnipresent then, a lot of pollution, and a lot of these environmental groups really did yeoman work in cleaning up a lot of problems that we had. We have much less pollution now because of the activities of a lot of these advocacy groups. But as things got better and better in a lot of areas, their ability to raise money became more and more difficult. And they've seized upon trace chemicals as a major issue. You've seen it emerge over the past 10 or 15 years, and it's a huge, huge money-generating bonanza for groups like Environmental Working Group. I'm not saying they don't believe that it causes harm. A lot of them are very unscientific. They're really scientific Luddites. I think that they do believe it, a lot of them, but just because they believe it doesn't make it so. And conveniently, putting out scare alerts raises a lot of money. So it's really bringing together of a lot of really sad threads that have led to a ballooning of chemophobia in the world today.
You know, it's hard then to tell people how they kind of go off into these sail into these waters, you know, because they're hearing all this stuff. Ultimately, what do you tell someone? What do you tell a consumer?
I think it's not as complicated as people think it might be. The EPA and the USDA have rules that have been in place by career scientists that predated the Trump administration, frankly predated the Obama administration. They really have been dedicated historically to protecting us. When they issue what's called when they issue a report that sets a limit on chemical exposures, it's already set at 100 to 1,000 times lower than what we conceivably be affected by. In other words, they find the level that might harm us, then they multiply it by 100, and that's the level that they set. So they're already building in 100-fold factor, and in some cases they build in 1,000-fold factor. And what we're seeing is, what we know from these studies is that conventional food is safe. Organic food is safe, but not safer. In fact, you look at the organic food, it's a lot of it is imported. About 60-70% is imported from other countries where they don't have the kind of regulations that we have in the United States. And as a three-part Washington Post investigation found last year, a huge percentage, well over 50% of organic food is fraudulent. It's not really organic. So the idea that you're getting safer food by buying organics is just as disapproved by mainstream science and by the mainstream media that has looked at this. So I just say we don't really need to be that concerned. Anything that you're going to buy at the food store is going to be safe. What you don't want to do is eat things like sugar. Alcohol is very dangerous. The idea that we're worrying about trace chemicals, but we go out and have three glasses of wine and sock it down with some chocolate cake afterwards, but obsess over a tiny bit of residue of glyphosate at 1,000 times lower than can affect us, is just irrational. And that's where we've entered, an irrational state. Don't be scared. Our food supply is safe. And go about your business. Worry about real issues in the world.
Well, that's good advice. And if people want to check out your site, where do they find you?
Yeah, we're a nonprofit, no industry funding ever in the history of our site. We've been in existence for 7 years. It's called geneticliteracyproject.org. We cover a lot of issues on biotechnology, human issues like designer babies and gene therapy, gene editing issues, agricultural biotechnology, but also chemicals related to agricultural use. And I think a lot of people find some of those articles the most illuminating ones on our site.
Well, you have a lot of great information on your site, and I visit it frequently. And I appreciate your taking the time to being with us on Farm to Table Talk. John Entine, thank you.
Thank you. I'm honored to be on the show, Roger.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.